Mystery Babylon with their rules and laws. Laws of ungodliness, politics, and uniform
politics. Illusions of inequality.
Radio.
Sound wave in the air.
CKUT.
Montreal, Canada.
CKUT. It's time to take sampling to a whole new level.
Pleasant good afternoon to you, Montreal. Welcome to West Indian Rhythms. My name is Howard Carr. And the co-host of the show,
Chief
Sankar. And along with the rest of the crew,
DJ Nicholas.
Special guest, DJ. With the news,
Brian Amplify.
Welcome to West Indian Rhythms. On CKUT 90.3 FM, People's Station.
Harvest you deliver, yet we take you for granted, Mother. Your beauty we deface, destroying the trees in the forest, distressing the ozone layer, polluting the waters with acid rain and toxic waste.
Be one with you, Mother Earth. Give me one thing that I love. great honorable pretender. He's the true grandmaster, the extempo. With the rhythm and rhyme and the lyrics on the flow. So tell it to the world and make the whole world know. He's a living legend in the house of Kaiso. So come in, pretender.
Some people in the world today don't realize that worry is no pay. Let me upon your shoulder, only bringing you older and older. These wicked things them people does do, they don't realize you have worries. Tell them to never ever worry.
Never worry, never worry, never worry about a thing. No,
never ever worry.
Mm-hmm. But life is never easy. Hear the song we sing.
Never ever worry. What I'm saying,
what
is,
I'm saying
true.
Is true.
Always consider somebody suffering more than.
Never worry, never worry, just free up your mind. Same way, just send the rain, send the sun to shine. And if you get yourself falling flat on your face, I say to pick yourself up and get back in the race.
Sight of the nation, let me rock the rap, so we done.
Minutes past the hour of 4 o'clock. Let me say pleasant good afternoon to you, Montreal, and the world at large. I want to remind you that you're listening to CKUT 90.3 FM all the way in beautiful Montreal, Quebec, Canada, and WFFR Sunshine Radio, Washington, D.C. So if you know someone around that area, tell them to log on to WFFR Sunshine Radio, Washington, D.C. Now, you just heard three pieces from a gentleman that I totally, although he told me I wasn't to call him a gentleman, I remember once, and we both laughed. Could have been, let me get down this music, could have been the Bob Marley of Trinidad and Tobago. But one year we were there, and I went to go see the Goose at the radio station. And while on my way there, I heard that the cops had raided their rehearsal space and their offices. That's a band he was with. And destroyed everything because they think they were too subversive. In other words, they were too radical. I don't know what was radical about ringing the bell and so forth and so forth. Open with a song called Mother Earth. And the thing is, you have to listen to this guy. You know, Brother Resistance was a rhythm poet and also a musician from Trinidad and Tobago. I can't vouch and tell you I know this guy inside out. No, I've met him quite a few times through other artists from Trinidad and my radio friend, Ian the Goose, Eligor, and just talking with them because I like to talk with people like that. There was one, the originator of the word soca, Lord Shorty, and I used to talk with them and listen to their side of it, you know. And he came up with something called Rapso. And Rapso is a poet and saying what the people, his people, are thinking then. And it was only well liked by the government there. And everybody just sort of left him alone when they realized how foolish they sounded. Because if they were in Jamaica and they're listening to culture and they're listening to Bob and his group, they would what would they have done? But in 1984 or 85, 83, somewhere around there, I was there for Carnival or I was there on a vacation. I don't remember what it was. And I was going down to the station to hang out with the Goose for a while to do an interview. As a matter of fact, that was my first interview in Trinidad and Tobago, the Goose. He now lives in New York, running things in New York. So I heard this and I was really disappointed because we were going to go there and see. And because Rapso is a kind of a rhythm that even if you're standing there like you're frozen, all of a sudden you find your left foot or your right foot would be moving in a direction that you can't control it. And then the left foot would join it, and then the whole body would be doing this whole thing. And you say, what the hell is this? It's Rapso. Because the words, the rhythm, the music, it hits your soul. And as Bob says, when it hits your soul, you gotta feel all right. You know what I mean? So I had loved the Rapso, and I'm sorry that the government didn't get more behind it. Like what our government in Jamaica did at one point, they got behind the reggae music. This is why it was all over the world. Fab Five toured the world playing reggae for the government of Jamaica. A lot of people don't know that. So that's it. Brother Resistance, he passed. His real name was Roy Lewis. And he also had a African name, I hope I can remember it, Lotalo Masimba, I think, born 1954, and he passed away 13th of July, fairly young man, in his 60s, 66. Brother Resistance, another of the quality artists that are moving on to their maker. All right, so I paid my little tribute. I hope you enjoyed it. And don't forget, at 6 o'clock, I'll be talking to a lady that I haven't seen or spoken to in many years. Last time I saw her was when she came to Montreal, and she stayed by us, as a matter of fact. And I haven't seen her since or heard her. And it should be interesting. Miss J.C. Lodge, beautiful singer, beautiful voice, beautiful person. So stay tuned for that. That will be on the Zoom at 6 o'clock, all right? And if you want the Zoom numbers, if you have a pen, I'll give you a minute to get a pen. And then you can see what she looks like now. We are doing this, Drew and myself, because we want you to, we want the younger ones. And if you have any young kids in the audience there, let them get on the Zoom to see the quality, hear the sounds of what it was in the 80s, the 70s, the 80s, 90s. And compare if they want. And because, you know, a lot of these artists, and I'll tell the upcoming artists we have here in Montreal, it's not so much the hit songs that they have now that they're making their money off. It's the songs that they recorded earlier on in their career. So think about it each time you go in the studios, you know, and you go with the rhythms that are slack or whatever. It's not going to last, you know. One of the persons that I happen to know, we had brought her here a couple of years ago, Millie Jackson. You know, she's a little bit raunchy, but not to the point where it's, you'd say, nah, I can't be bothered listening to that. But her show is raunchy. And this is what they're surviving on, the one or two good songs. But people like Millie Small, My Boy Lollipop, it sells a million copies every year. I was watching an interview with this young lady, and she says she doesn't understand why is it Bob Marley music is still so strong out there. So the guy asked her, do you listen to Bob? She said, of course not. And the guy told her, you need to listen and you'll understand what one loves mean. It's played all over the world. I mean, you know, not everybody can be a Bob Marley. Little bit, Brother Resistance had a touch of it, but they didn't appreciate him in Trinidad and Tobago until the later years, the latter years. That song I just played, Ring the Bell, I've heard it in parties. That wasn't played by a Trinidadian. It was played by an American kid that grew up in New York. You know what I mean? Quality. So, 24 minutes pass. 24 minutes pass, yeah, and somebody was saying that I'm speaking the truth. At 4:30, we're going to hit with Mr. Egbert Gay because we have a thing there that we want to talk about, and it's bugging me. The thing about the black entrepreneurship, the loans, etc. I first saw that in his paper, The Community Contact, and my skin crawled. To know in this day and age we are doing this garbage here in Montreal, Quebec, Canada. But we're going to talk about it at 4:30. But, you know, let me see. I want to play a song here. Let me see if I can find it first before I say anything. This is a young lady... that lived here in Montreal, very attractive, and she moved to Windsor. And she sent me this CD. She loved to sing, and she'd come by the club at La Siesta. So we're going to play this. We have 5 more minutes, so we're going to play. It's called Outside My Window by Eileen Bennett. Brand new, first time on the air in Montreal.
Crying will be heard. There'll be no bonds of slavery for little boys and girls. There'll be no distinction of color, creed, or tongue when we see a great Redeemer, God's children live as one. One of these days, one of these days. Can still hear Jesus saying, there will be those who hate the light. So it's time to get excited, 'cause we know it won't be long till every tongue and tribe and nation will sing a brand new song. One of these days, one of these days. Jesus is preparing, we'll be beyond our wildest dreams. We'll walk on streets of gold and praise the great I am. Sing glory, hallelujahs to God and to the Lamb. One of these days, one of these days.
Baby and Mr. Blue invites you to a barbecue on Saturday, July 24th from noon to 9 p.m. at Martin Luther King Park, formerly called Kent Park, Cotonage and Appleton. Weather permitting, come out and enjoy. On the menu, doubles, roti, jerk pork and chicken, curry goat and chicken, lots of side dishes. Music by DJ Jason. Wear your mask, social distancing required. That's Saturday, July 24th, noon to 9 p.m. at Martin Luther King Park in Côte des Neiges. So nice, we had to do it twice. For more information, call 514-771-7011.
It takes a good dose of courage and perseverance to get through a pandemic.
True, but it also takes a good dose of patience, resilience, confidence, optimism, humor, and love. Not to mention a dose of determination, endurance, empathy, motivation, hope, and ingenuity.
But above all, it takes a second dose of vaccine.
A message from the gouvernement du Québec.
Le Festival International de Nuit d'Afrique, presented by TD Bank, invites you to their 35th anniversary this summer. Join us for this world music event, a 13-day celebration from July 6th to the 18th. This innovative edition takes place in venues, outdoors, and online. A fusion of past and present, rich in history and in new musical discoveries. Discover the surprises. For more information and tickets, go to festivalnuitdafrique.com.
All right, was expecting Mr. To call, but I'm waiting. But we're going to send this out because Edwin asked me to send this to his beautiful wife in Rochester, New York. And I found it for you, Edwin, and here it goes. Hold me in your arms. Never let me go. Standing tall in the hearts of lovers and others.
I'll hold you and touch you and make you my woman. I'll give you my love with sweet surrender. Tonight our hearts will beat as one, and I will hold you,
kiss you. I gotta rewind this for a certain Michael Garraway and his beautiful wife all the way in North Carolina. And now you two behave yourselves, okay? I know the weather is nice. My caller is online. Egbert, you'll have to hold on there, brother. This is a love match. Standing tall in the hearts of lovers.
I'll hold you.
Please do.
And touch you. Make you my woman. I'll give you my love with sweet surrender. Tonight our hearts will beat as one, and I will hold you, touch you, and make you my woman tonight.
There's something in your eyes I see, a pure and simple honesty.
Hold me in your arms tonight. Fill my life. Not waste this precious time. This moment's ours to treasure. Hold me in your arms tonight. We'll make it last forever. When the
trust in me.
Hold me in your arms tonight. Fill my life with pleasure. Let's not waste this precious time. This moment's ours to treasure.
Hold me in your arms. It's that kind of year that we need to say that to our loved ones. And hold me in your arms, because boy, The way things are going now, you wonder. You wonder. Because it's crazy. Mr. Teddy Prendergast, and I got my wandering person on the phone, Mr. Egbert Gay. And because he's hiding from me, I'm sure of it. Are you hiding, Brother Egbert? Yes, I sent it out to him. Could I hear your I'm not hearing you as loud as I thought I would. No, could be my thing here. Let me check it just to be sure before I start blaming you. I'm hearing you, but I hope the audience are hearing you.
No, I was just reminding you
about... Go ahead.
No, I was just reminding you about our little trip to North Carolina, remember? On our way to the cruise?
On our way to the cruise, yes, yes. So
then we stopped in North Carolina?
Yes.
And, yeah.
It was nice. That was
a nice part of it. We overnighted
in good old North Carolina, and it was interesting.
Charlotte, North Carolina. It was an amazing trip. We were driving through the dark in North Carolina, in the dark, going to look for this place to overnight. You were so scared.
I didn't want when it comes to America, I am scared. I have my nephew who was an ex-lawman listening to me right now, and he's going to say, oh, come on, Uncle Howard.
Yeah.
But I don't trust.
So you know,
Egbert, I am totally grateful living in Canada. Believe you me.
Well, it's 100% right about that. Yeah. In terms of security, in terms of
medical,
everything, you know, in terms of social network that's here. I mean, Canada is certainly, you know, stands as one of the best countries in the world to live in terms of, you know, even for minorities. And I'm not saying that things are that good for minorities. And you look what's going on with the indigenous community, you know, and you could always find fault. But in terms of, you know, having access to a social network and a social foundation where people can get educated, probably get health care, get housing, get some of the basics, you know, I think Canada stands head and shoulders above most of the other countries.
Yes, we can get a lot of things, but I found an article in your paper that frustrated me. And it frustrated me in every sense of the word that the government is giving $291.3 million to be made available to the black community at large, then black English speaking community at large. If I didn't see this in your papers, I would be saying, nah, that's not true. I didn't read it in the Community Contact. Yeah, but it was on CBC, but I don't listen to CBC. I'm sorry. You know? What about the English papers that we do, the Gazette?
Yeah. I think it's important for, like, to start with community media and certainly go outwards, right?
Of course.
You start the other way. Start with community media. And, you know, I'm saying so. I want to say that I hope that people who are the custodians of this loan would see it fit into probably give you a call, or you probably give them a call and see if they would speak to you, given the fact that they might be hesitant to talk to Community Contact because they might be, like we say in Trinidad, they might be toting. Which is a term that's used for people who, you know, who carry feelings with them. So in Trinidad, the thing is, you know, you're toting. And so that might be the case. So it should be that maybe you can invite one of them, and maybe I'll try to arrange
that. I'm going
to
do that because I got to know.
You know, because with Community Contact, they might be toting, and they might say, well, you know, Community Contact is saying all these things that they're not talking to us, which is, yeah, I think, the right thing to do.
But wait, let me ask you a question. Did anybody from this organization speak to the Community Contact?
No, they never did. In fact, we reached out to them early, And we say, you know, like, you know, do, and they promise an interview, you know. It's not like they didn't promise. They say, you know, yes, we promise you guys we're going to talk to you before May is over. And that never really happened. But, I mean, like I said, with community contact, a lot of people taught feelings. And we can't avoid that. We still got to do and say the things that we think is the things that are right. So I don't know. But I'm thinking maybe with you, it might be easier for them to talk and talk to the community, because it's so important, Stretch. This loan is for people across Canada, Black people across Canada, emerging businesses and businesses that are in place. And it's not for like any select group of friends of, you know, those people. We have a lot of people who've been doing business here, and it's so important that they know about it and they can apply. $25,000 to $250,000 in loan, that's significant to help any business, and it's significant to help building a business foundation in our community. So I think it's really like, after this, Black people ain't going to get this kind of shot again, you know. So it's important that these people reach out and stand up and make sure that this happens. And, you know, again, you know, it's so much money that if we just kind of ladida your way around this, it really might not work to our benefit and for the entire Black community across Canada, you know. So I think that's what it is. So hopefully, you know, I'm going to make a little thing and see if something could happen with you. They probably feel more comfortable talking to you on the radio and, you know, stuff like that. And I have written stuff as I should, you know, questioning those people's loyalty.
Please do not make any excuses, okay? You did nothing negative. You said the facts.
Exactly.
You said the facts, and the facts is what I took up on myself to find out what is happening. Because, you know, I went by my hair salon with my barber the other day, and this guy has a nice shop, clean everything. Mm-hmm. I don't know if anybody on the block there, or even him, want to expand. The loan would do wonders for him. But to what cheesed me off, I never heard anything about this. I don't have a business, so I don't want a loan, to be honest with you. If I need a loan, I'll go to CN, whatever they call it, and I'll get all the loan I need. But right. I'm saying that the business is in this city, and I'm not knocking Trudeau because I voted for him. I love this father, and he better watch it. I love him too, but it could rub off the wrong way. Mr. Trudeau, you need to put somebody in the Black English-speaking community so we can hear about this. What does
we could have some representation. You're right.
Of course,
about that too.
I would love to have that, and I don't mind telling him to his face. Put somebody in.
Well, I think you're 100% right in terms of, you know, like your barber needing a $10,000.
Exactly.
Because, like, when I started my business, you know, I started with, you know, a friend of mine who just loaned me $5,000 or $3,500 or something ridiculous like that. And I was able to start my business like that. Today, I don't need a loan. I mean, we're still really struggling, but I'm not in the kind of business that I'm going to take loan, because I don't know how I'm going to freaking pay back.
Right.
But, you know, the challenge here is for the other businesses that a $10,000 can do wonders for a small business. Eh? That's the thing about small businesses. You give a restaurant guy $10,000 to $15,000 to $20,000, he's going to hire 3 people, 4 people. And what it does, it starts that thing of us taking care of ourselves, hiring our own people and paying them. And it's so important, buying houses, buying business, investing in real estate. It's sad to know that our community is so underrepresented among those who own real estate in Canada. And we've been here for so long, you know, but it starts with people having an awareness of business. People like you who have worked so long, you've been fortunate able to go and buy a building. We bought our buildings at the right time.
Right.
But now younger people, it's going to be so much difficult for them. Mm-hmm. So they need help. And so, you know, basically that's why it's so important to build businesses. And I think that's the challenge. And I think, you know, for me, for right now, I think businesses still got to follow the procedure that is supposed to be in place. There's something called FACE, F-A-C-E. and people go on their Facebook page or their website and apply. Apply for the loan, and you know, you might see, like, you know, last time I looked at, you know, I see people in Toronto that are saying, well, we still haven't heard from them or we haven't heard anything. But you've got to start the process. You have to go to this website called FACE and apply. And hopefully, you know, we're going to get something happening. But I think it's important also maybe for you to speak to them, you know, and hear what they say. Maybe they might be able to want to talk to you easier. So that's the challenge, you know, and I think that's where we are in terms of, you know, dealing with this particular dicey situation.
The organization called FACE simply means mm-hmm. Federation of African Canadian Economics.
I
don't see any West Indian there, but then again, I'll bypass that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But the thing is, I really, really and truly would like to speak to some representative from FACE
mm-hmm.
and just ask him or her, whatever, what's happening in our community? Because as a matter of fact, somebody told me that they tried to apply and they went through somebody who is a member of parliament or in the government here in Montreal. Well, when I heard that, I know it was dead business. Because these guys have no interest in our English-speaking community. One guy, and he just retired the other day. What's his name? I can't remember his name offhand. But he showed some interest where we were concerned in that region. So I really have no sympathy, you know, to without somebody telling me something. You know, I see the Côte de Neige Black Community Association. They seem to be entwined with them or what, I don't know.
Well, what it is I guess it's obvious that because the person who is in charge of FACE is also in charge of Côte de Neige BCA.
And we're not hearing nothing?
Exactly. I mean, that's the challenge. I mean, it has to really become a community initiative.
Of course.
Right? It has to be like a community thing where people, you know, where businesses apply, some get through, some didn't get through because they don't meet the requirements. You know, they don't, you know, fit all the criteria that might be demanded. You know, so it got to be that. It's bad enough that the government couldn't... Black people shouldn't have to go through this problem to get a freaking loan, right? So, but it's bad enough that we are going through this problem. And so to have to go through additional hurdles, I think it's really, really, really seriously, you know, deficient on organizers' part, right? So the challenge here is we have to start the process. Like, most Black businesses should know, go on FACE website, try your best to negotiate and have some of the criteria that's needed and see if you meet the thing. But again, you know, that again doesn't take away the responsibility from the people at FACE or those who are behind this thing to come out and speak to people and businesses and say, this is how, you know, the process works. This is how we're going to get it going. It'd be an encouraging force behind this whole loan thing. So I think that's where the challenge is. And hopefully, like I said, I'm going to try to see if I can get somebody who can speak with you and tell you more because, you know, if there's some sort of hesitancy to talk to community contact, then talk to other people.
I would mm-hmm. totally appreciate that because the thing is, I don't want to judge them without hearing their side of the story.
But I
personally would like for them to show me some interest because I was up on Victoria there. There's a Samuel image. I don't know if he needs a loan. I don't know if the ghost needs a loan.
Look in community contact. You're going to see over 20, 30, 40 businesses that are there. And these are mostly long-standing businesses that are all, look at all those restaurants.
I mean, just
a cursory look at community contact and you see, like, I would have something like 40, 50 businesses now. Back in the heyday, we had 80 to 90 businesses. So, you know, we're all, and every one of them could do with a couple between $10,000 and $250,000 loans. And, you know, it's money to pay back.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like you're giving them a grant, or, you know. And
exactly.
Most businesses, they don't want to grant. Business people work between 40 and 80 hours every week. They miss the children's school. They miss this. They miss the concerts. They work when they don't feel well. And they go out and they keep doing it. So business people know how to make money and how to pay back. But they need that sort of hands up. They never got it. And at least Trudeau recognized this and certainly decided to reach out to them. And so there shouldn't be additional obstacles preventing them from having this, you know, having and access to this loan, you know.
The money is there. That is what is killing me, you know. It's there. Come across here, please. I'm asking you, come across this side of it. Come west. Drive west. And,
yes, and speak to people where they live.
Yes.
A lot of black people do not live online. You know,
exactly.
We got to come to that awareness. We have to know that a lot of black businesses are not online. They're busy. They're busy making food. They're busy doing hair. They're busy doing stuff. They don't have the time to go online, you know. So they need a little trigger, a little, you know, something that would get them going further. So I think is the biggest challenge here. And hopefully you get one of those representatives to come out and tell you where, you know, this is how we want to do it and how it's going to be done. And then you can pass judgment from there.
The thing that kills me, apparently they were on the CBC. Somebody sent me an article that they were on the CBC. And in one part of the interview, there was somebody who was asked if they're male or female. I don't know why.
Part of the questionnaire, that's what I heard also. I had one of my reporters go online and try to go through the whole process, and she did find it questionable, some of the questions that they ask as she and thing. And she is going there as a reporter, you know, just trying to follow the whole track so she could write about it.
Mm-hmm.
And she was finding it a little bit, you know, a little bit challenging, you know. But even so, I mean, you know, hopefully the businesses are able to go on and do what and follow the steps and see, you know, and see if it takes them anywhere. Hopefully some money fall in the pockets of those who need it most and those who it was meant to help.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what it is. You know?
Mm-hmm. Changing the subject in the last couple of minutes that we have. What about that gentleman who is suing the police here for $1 million?
Well, I think, you know, I had an opportunity to talk about that yesterday and the other day on CJD. And, you know, I really think that he is right on target.
Totally.
Amara, because he is, you know, if you remember the facts of this situation was that he was stopped, you know, and the police had that challenge. Somebody took out the police gun and they assaulted the police. And he is the one who called 911.
Mm-hmm.
He called 911, you know, to help the police. And he stayed until 911 got there. And 911 told him to go home. And when he got home, they went and beat the man up. I mean, really, come on. That primitiveness is just like too much.
Brought all his family out into a bus.
Oh, and, exactly. God. You know, like wholesale abuse, you know, and that's what's nasty about the whole thing. So, you know, $1.2 million is very little for the city to pay for that sort of abuse and that sort of, you know, putting all people out of their way and that sort of thing, right? So hopefully the city would see it right to do so. But at the same time, I mean, the point has to be that the police officers have to be held accountable.
Of course.
Like, you cannot keep beating people up. You cannot keep, you know, stepping on them. And then the city pays for your wrongdoing. And then you continue out there doing bad things to people.
But Egbert,
so the point is, let the city pay and let the whole police accountable, you know.
The city pays for it, but it's our tax money.
Exactly, right? So if he doesn't get any, if his pay is still running, and if he's still working, he still has his badge, he still has his gun, he still has that, you know, that authority over people, you know, let his union pay for it.
That's what I'm saying. Go straight to the union.
faithfully.
Go straight to the union.
And say, listen, guys, the judge find him guilty. If a judge, if you're found guilty by a judge, you know, then certainly let the union pay for it. But have accountability. Unless we have accountability, never mind all the silliness about body cameras and all that. That's just stupidness, right? So all that foolishness is spending more money on police. Because when black people tell you that things are bad. They're not lying, and you don't need a camera to tell you that police are abusing black people. But let them get a camera and go through that drama. But the point is, hold them accountable. If a police is never held accountable, if the department is not held accountable, if the brotherhood is not held accountable, then, you know, all police look bad.
You know,
the whole brotherhood look bad. You know, the whole justice system look bad. Mm-hmm. So we want to live in a society where we could trust the police. Man, if somebody come here and rob my place, I call in the police, right? You know, that's what I'm going to refer to. So you don't want to hold them in ugliness. You don't want to see them as the enemy. You want the police to be the police.
Yep.
But they have to be held accountable.
The thing is, one thing I'm going to disagree with you. Is that camera is totally important because these guys lie through their teeth. You understand? They were trained to lie. I am convinced of that. So without the cameras, if they didn't have a camera with certain cases like where this idiot knelt into the guy's neck and killed him.
Right. Yeah.
Who would have been?
But remember it wasn't the police camera. Remember, it's
this one saying,
girl who had your phone.
Right, so you know? The camera, whether it be on the shirt, and wherever.
Those guys have learned how to turn off that camera and to manipulate and all that sort of thing. So look, I have nothing against the camera. They can keep the camera if they want, but
keep
that should not be central.
But it has to be running at all times.
It has to be running. It has to come with proper regulation.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, what you want, ultimately the end has to point towards police being held accountable. I hardly ever call for people to be fired because I'm not into firing people. I kind of think you've got to look after
their family. I'm into that.
You're into firing.
Listen, my friend, I worked with the railroad for 33 years, okay?
Uh-huh.
And if you made a mistake on that main line, it costs lives. All right?
They're behind.
So if you're not capable of doing the job, you should be fired. Because if you beat up one person eventually and get away with it, you notice all these cops who have been beating and killing in the States. They've done it 4, 5, 10, 15, 16 times.
You're 100% right. You're 100% right on that. You have that trail of misbehavior, and you're so right about that. But you know, still, you know, I said
get rid of the sore foot.
Progress, but who don't call for people to get fired? But we do call for accountability, and accountability must start from the kind of people that you hire, the training that they have, and the ongoing supervision that's in place. So you know, so if you have proper, you choose the right people. And then you train them properly and you look at them, you monitor their behavior properly. You don't have any need to fire them. But I you're right 100% that, you know, these bad guys in the States have been beating up people and killing people for years, you know. And you know, so, I you know, in Montreal, we have a special task because these guys, I mean, they really run amok when it comes to minorities. Mm-hmm. And the figures are there, you know, they stop black people and Arab people and indigenous groups and young people 5 times more than they stop mainstream of society.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's an endemic problem. It's a problem that's tightly ingrained in that system. And that's why we call it systemic racism. Mm-hmm. You know, I've been talking about systemic racism on the radio for the last 20, 25 years. And, you know, people are like, I'm crazy. You know. In 1968, when Stokely Carmichael and Mr. Hamilton talked and they defined what institutional racism and systemic racism is, people tend to think it was all individual racism. We could deal with individual racism. Somebody call you black, you punch them, you ignore them, you whatever, you know. Individual racism, easy to deal with, right?
I used to do this in Toronto. You call me black, I said, just like your dad.
Yeah. Oh, God. You know, so you have ways of dealing with individual racism.
Yep.
But systemic racism is deep and binding. You can't deal with that.
All right.
And to bring it full circle, that's one of the ways you deal with systemic racism. And you will see a lot of other cultural groups that have done it. One of the ways that they've dealt with systemic racism is by building strong business,
yep.
By having an economic front that people are going to respect you.
Mm-hmm.
They respect money. Everybody likes money, eh?
Big time.
You know, so that's the thing. So full circle, you deal with racism and you deal with the respect of community by building a strong economic force that they can respect. And the only way to have economic force is to build businesses. Individual wealth doesn't mean anything if you're black. You're just a rich black guy.
You're just a rich black guy.
But if you have a rich
and where did you get that money from?
Exactly.
Drugs.
So, you know, community wealth is 100 million times better than individual wealth.
You know,
because I know Stretch has some money. But when I start talking money with Stretch and
Oh boy, that's another story.
You gotta go, right?
But you know, I want to tell you something. When I was mm-hmm. going to school in Toronto, I lived in a mm-hmm. rooming house right across the street. It's 20 and a half O'Hara.